Welcome to Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, joined today for our first part of the running back preview by a very special guest, JJ Zacharyson. You know him at Late Round QB on Twitter. JJ, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. And I see we both got the green shirt memo today.
Perfect. And kind of green backgrounds. Like, it looks like you got a green wall behind you. I've got greenery behind me until for the remainder of this renovation, however long that happens to be. I do want to just at the very top, like, there's a reason we're having you on here for the running back preview. Tell people about the Late Round Prospect Guide and where they can find it.
Yeah, Late Round Prospect Guide. You can find it over on lateround.com. It's really just an analytical, mathematical way of analyzing these guys. I obviously watch them as well, but I wanted to have sort of a process to lean on and to go to with running backs and wide receivers in particular. I do tight ends now too, but in the guide, you get every running back and wide receiver profiled that was at the NFL Combine. Then I also have a year two model in it where I look at sophomores in the NFL. So guys who just finished their rookie seasons, profile all of that. It's 130 plus pages of just absolute nerdiness. So if you're into that kind of thing, check it out, lateround.com.
And that's what we're kind of trying to do here with the running back and the wide receiver preview, both two parts. Last week for wide receivers, we had Matt Waldman on Tuesday. We had Jacob Gibbs on Friday. You get a pretty good mix of film and a pretty good mix of the data with those two. And this week we've got JJ here on Tuesday. And like he said, it's not like he's abandoning the film, but we're going to talk a lot about numbers. And then on Friday, we've got Emory Hunt for part two of the running back preview. He's going to talk a lot more about film. So hopefully a little bit for everybody on today's show. Then it will be kind of an overview of the class at the start. We'll talk about JJ's process, but then we will have, like we did with wide receivers, some individual previews on the guys who are currently the top five running backs by DLF rookie ADP. That is Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Blake Corum, Jalen Wright, and Braylon Allen. We are going to try to give more analysis than what I've heard a lot and what I've said a lot. We're not really going to know how to rank these guys until we get landing spots. That will remain true, but we'll still try to talk about them a little bit as prospects. As always, we start with three questions for our guest. And I just want to kind of go back to the model here for a second, JD. Can you give everyone like a 10,000 foot view of your running back model? What goes into it?
Yeah, sure. The goal for the model, both at running back and wide receiver, and tight end's a little bit different, but at running back and wide receiver, the goal is to predict a player's B2S is what I call it, his best two seasons across his first three in the league. And it's just the average of those best two seasons and points per game that creates a number. And that's what I'm really aiming towards, right? I didn't want to just do, you know, how he'd perform his rookie season or how he'd perform his second or third season. So you're getting sort of a wider range, by looking at their first 3 years in the league. And then there's inputs that go into that and trying to predict how well a running back or a wide receiver would then perform. And the running back inputs are, there's seven of them. So I can just run through them really quickly. Yeah. There's size, and it's just weight. It's not height. It's not BMI. It's literally just weight for the running back position. Now, I know people push back and be like, but Devon Achane, but Keaton Mitchell, and there's always like smaller run, Jahmyr Gibbs. And there were other things that those guys did. Gibbs had the pass catching profile and the draft capital, and Devon Achane had a really, really good production profile. Keaton Mitchell, obviously had the speed score and had the crazy speed and athleticism aspect to things. Weight's not everything. It's just an input. And that's not even necessarily my own bias of saying that I think that running backs who are smaller are worse. I actually, if anything, have a bias towards those guys because I think they're more fun and entertaining to watch.
For sure.
Realistically, if we're trying to predict fantasy football performance, coaches use smaller running backs a lot differently than they use the bigger bodied backs. And the bigger bodied backs are generally and historically the ones that are scoring more fantasy points. So weight is an input. There's also a metric called breakout score that I developed this offseason. I don't hate breakout age per se, but breakout age is just one singular binary metric where it's saying this guy broke out at this age, and if he'd barely missed that cutoff, then the guy didn't break out and he's looked the exact same as someone who did absolutely nothing. So I developed breakout score, which is essentially the age of a running back when he hit different thresholds in total yards per team play, which is very obvious what that means, just the amount of rushing and receiving yards divided by the number of team plays that running back's team had. And it's looking at these different thresholds and basically spitting out a number between 0 and 100 saying this guy has X breakout score with 50. being the average. There's also best season prorated reception share. That's pretty self-explanatory as well. It's just the percentage of team receptions that a running back had in their best season. Their speed score, which is weight adjusted 40 time. I think that when people hear about models and analytics with prospecting, they think that the combine is like this huge event and it's a huge deal. And honestly, like the only thing I care about at the combine is a player's weight at running back and then how fast he runs the 40 and then adjusting for those things. And really with speed score in the model, it's only looking at the upper bounds and the lower bounds. Like they're, you know, between like 92 and 112, which is like 80% of the sample, they're all getting scored the exact same. So it's really just looking at players who are very, very fast for their weight and then very, very slow for their weight, whether looking at a green or a red flag. There's also draft day age. So how old a running back is at draft day. You know, obviously younger running backs who are entering the league, they probably are just better at the position because they're entering the league younger and they probably were able to produce at a younger age. And that's a sign of talent. There's a teammate score, which is essentially, you know, did a guy play with another good pro in his backfield? And we'll get to a guy later, I'm sure, that definitely played with some good pros. And then the last one, and this is the most important piece, draft capital, right? I mean, all of this stuff is not looking at, you know, none of this is charting. None of this is film-based analysis that I'm looking at here. It's all production-based. But at the same time, draft capital is sort of an input that has that embedded in it, right? All these front offices are spending millions and millions of dollars to say, I want to draft this guy. I don't want to draft this guy. And that's obviously not just based on analytics. They're going and they're scouting these guys and they're doing a lot of work. And, you know, we're trying to win at fantasy football and I will gladly use an input like draft capital to help guide me and be better at fantasy.
Right. Yes. I think what's interesting to me, and it's going to turn into more than three questions for sure, because I've got a follow up already. Like I think about the size thing that you mentioned at the top. And it was really just kind of, it'd be very easy to say that was a 1 year blip with the little guys last year. And there were a bunch of them. But the wide receivers we've seen for kind of a 3 year trend or 4 year trend now were the smaller guys. And then draft capital, we're also seeing a trend that probably really gets enhanced this year because there's nobody that's going in round one. How long do you need to see in terms of like, well, now we're seeing smaller backs for 2 or 3 years, or now we just don't see running backs drafted in round one anymore. So I might need to adjust that. Like, how long is it a trend? And when can we just say, yeah, it was probably just 1 or 2 years worth of classes?
Yeah, look, you know, I'm testing every single offseason. I'm switching things up and changing things up every offseason. I changed the model pretty dramatically this year, mostly because of the way that I was looking at like age adjusted production in it. And I thought there was a better way to do that. And so I'm testing every year. Now, you know, going to the wide receiver piece, I actually don't even care about wide receiver size. You know, wide receiver size to me has always been an overinflated, overrated thing. The thing with running backs and sort of what the way that I see this is draft capital being an input usually sort of embeds and encapsulates a lot of the things that we might want to add to a model, right? Like a lot of times people might want to add athleticism metrics to the wide receiver model, for instance. It doesn't matter at all. There's nothing from the combine that I put in the wide receiver model whatsoever. And it's likely because draft capital is inherently already putting that in for me, right? So Xavier Worthy, you know, I know that this is a running back show and I'm talking about wide receivers, but it just gives you an example of sort of how this all works. You know, Xavier Worthy goes and he runs a crazy 40 time. Well, he's probably going to get drafted like 20 spots higher than what he would be drafted if he ran a 4.440, right? So that kind of thing is already sort of embedded in that. And I think that's sort of the case with running back to some degree, but I think the difference is that running backs are deployed and looked at differently by NFL teams and what they can do on the field in terms of just improving team outcomes versus what that means for your fantasy team, right? And I think that what's important is a team might say, hey, I want to get a smaller running back to play in a tandem, you know, with my, you know, bigger bodied back or something like that. But at the end of the day, you know, he's likely still going to be in a tandem and he's still, you know, we can look at this past year, look at Keaton Mitchell, look at Devon Achane, look at even Jahmyr Gibbs. Gibbs was looked at in the model almost identically to Bijan Robinson. Like they were, they were both, and because draft capital overrides a lot of this stuff whenever you're drafted 12th overall, but you know, look at Keaton Mitchell, look at Devon Achane even. And I love Achane especially. And I actually think you could consider Mitchell somewhat of an interesting buy too, but you have to, you know, it's not like their workloads were out of control, right? Like it's not like we've seen a true shift yet with running backs and these teams being open-minded to giving 190-pound backs the rock more frequently, right? I mean, we'll see it. I mean, Austin Eckler did it for a few years there where he was a true bell cow back. And I'm not dismissing that aspect of things. I think you just sort of adjust, based on what you see. But I also think that a lot of times with running backs and smaller running backs, it might take a little time before those guys get the trust of their team that they're able to truly carry that workload. And the model's looking at the first 3 years of their career. And if you look at like a guy like Eckler, it didn't get going until a little bit later in his career. And it might even happen that way for Achan now that Mostert's back. And, and even Jahmyr Gibbs with David Montgomery, we know that Gibbs without Montgomery is a lot more attractive of a fantasy asset than Gibbs with Montgomery, not to say that he's a bad asset with Montgomery. But I do think that it's easy to look at those individual cases and want to really change the model up, right, or change things up. But at the end of the day, I do still think that, the larger trend still exists.
Well, and it does seem like if coaches have more questions about the durability of those small backs, and then Keaton Mitchell and Devon Achane both got hurt last year, what's the chances that the coach is going to be like, oh yeah, I saw last year that they can definitely handle that workload. Right. So I don't like to focus too much on injuries, but when it is the type of guy, and even a Tank Dell, the type of guy where you have some concerns, can a guy of that size stay healthy in the league? And then they get hurt in their first year in the league. You at least have to wonder how much their coach is taking that into account. Let's get to question number two. And I think you brought up a good point. The workhorse running backs kind of going away. We still have a few of them. It's much more likely to get to do that if you're a larger back than if you're a smaller back. But also, I think we're getting to the point to where once you get past the first 10 or 12 running backs, however many guys are going to do that, we just need the guys who can be elite without that type of workload. And so with this class, most of the feedback I get from everybody I asked about it is it's just kind of a mediocre class. I'm just not that. We'll see who gets drafted on day two, and we'll draft them at the end of round one of rookie drafts, but there's not anybody special. Is that the case with this class because there aren't any guys with elite traits, or because there aren't any workhorse backs that can do everything?
Yeah, I think it's more so the latter. I do Definitely. Think that you can look at this class, and I love your point about sort of the running back landscape right now. If you look at just dynasty ADP or dynasty rankings, what have you, there's like six guys that we feel good about as right. like a true RB1 that you might want to spend up for. And I think this plays into the smaller back thing too, where the smaller backs might not be seeing a bigger workload. They're just a little bit more relevant because there's just so many RB2s in the NFL right now, right? Yeah. You could have guys ranked like RB40 right now in dynasty, and you wouldn't be shocked if they finish as an RB2, because finishing as an RB2 in fantasy really isn't that big of a deal at this point. You're really trying to get those truly, truly elite players. So I definitely think it's the latter, though, where there are players in this class that have pretty elite traits. It's just that I don't think there are any players in this class where it all comes together and we have a Bijan Robinson, a Breece Hall, those kinds of true bell cow backs. But there are definitely some elite pass catchers in this class. They just don't necessarily bring enough of that strong early down work. There are players with a ton of speed and athleticism, but they might not have the vision to necessarily do that consistently and be good consistently on the ground. There are players who are consistent, but then don't have that athleticism. And so, when I think people say that this is a weaker running back class, I think what they're really saying is, there's not that much juice at the top, right? There's not a guy that's likely going to completely transform. And maybe it'll happen after the fact, but going in as prospects, there's not a guy who's really going to probably transform, the dynasty community and rankings and industry it just doesn't exist. There's not that combo of size, speed, athleticism, production, the strong vision, the pass catching ability. It's just not really there. I think there are guys who are 80% there. And I think that the class in general probably has a little bit more depth than people are giving it credit for. I think that there could be a lot of RB2, RB3 types in this class. I just have a hard time seeing a true RB1 Breece Hall type back in the class.
Yeah, the Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, probably not coming out of this class. I mentioned at the top, we're going to talk about Trey Benson, Brent Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Blake Corum, Jalen Wright, Braylon Allen. I might even, if I can, get a couple questions from the chat, because I know that they've got some guys they want to talk about as well. But I wanted to give you a chance here. Who's your favorite back from this class that's not one of those five guys? That's not one of the guys we're going to talk about here after the break.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I think it's a class where there's sort of this flatness to it. You know, there's like a lot of like RB2, RB3 types from a fantasy perspective. And so what I think because of that, we could see players emerge kind of unexpectedly, because it's not going to be that difficult for one player that's drafted in round five to maybe jump a guy that's drafted in round three or something like that. You know, you say favorite. So I'm going to go with sort of the value play, who I think would end up being sort of a sneaky late round pick in rookie drafts, a guy who I just think is just the general best value. And that's Isaiah Davis out of South Dakota State. To me, he just has a really, really complete profile. Now, I know he played at South Dakota State, and that's not Alabama. You know, it's not an SEC school. And so competition, obviously, a lot easier. So his production profile is going to look a lot better. Here's actually a really good example of what we were talking about earlier of things being sort of embedded in draft capital. There's actually nothing in the running back model. There is at wide receiver when it comes to like program strength and stuff. But in the running back model, there's no adjustments being made for the size of the program that a running back went to. And a lot of that, I believe, you know, this is more of a hypothesis more than anything else. A lot of that is because we don't see smaller school backs get drafted in the first couple rounds of the draft anyway. You know, so any of these smaller school guys who have great production profiles, maybe they'll go round three, but they're usually day three picks to begin with. And if you look at the guys who do go day two, there's been some hits. Look at Kareem Hunt. Look at David Johnson. I mean, there's been some decent hits from those players, which is why I think there's just no strong correlation when draft capital is part of the model. But, you know, I think Isaiah Davis, probably a day three guy. Maybe he doesn't get drafted, but I think he will get drafted. But he has really good size. He's 218 pounds. He split a backfield at South Dakota State with Pierre Strong. That was his first 2 years over there. He was still able to dig into his workload a little bit, which is a good sign, because obviously Strong ended up being an NFL player and he's been on rosters. Not like he's out of the league. And then if you look at Davis, his final two seasons, he broke tackles at an above average clip. He generated 10 plus yards at the third best rate in this class in his best season. He had an above average reception share. He's a pretty natural receiver. He had the third best offensive grade last year, according to PFF. And then whenever I always do statistical comparables with the model, and that dates back to 2011, his top two comps are James Robinson and Tyler Algier, which I thought was really interesting. You know, you get these bigger body guys who can kind of do it all, but they're not necessarily special athletes. They're not necessarily these ultra special backs. But I do think with Isaiah Davis, if he can find a spot, you know, obviously James Robinson finds a decent landing spot year one. Tyler Algier, you know, competing with older running backs and was able to carve out a role. I think that we could see Isaiah Davis, you know, if he gets the right spot, have a pretty great year one, and then just immediately flip him in Dynasty, right? Just immediately trade him away, get a second rounder for him, and then kind of move on. But I do like Davis as a value this year.
Excellent stuff. Isaiah Davis, definitely not one of the top five guys that we're going to talk about here in just a moment. Let's take a short break and then we'll jump right into Trey Benson. So Trey Benson, the consensus RB1, at least by ADP, maybe even by expert ranking. It seems like, I wonder if it's more of a fact of very few people that have him below two. So like he comes out at one in the averages. You know, he's got the size, 6'2", 216, played at the big school. But are you sold that he's the best running back in this class?
I'm not sold, but I don't think I'm going to look back at this class and if he is the RB1 to be surprised. Right. You know, like I think that if you look at the positives, he did break tackles at a pretty good rate, especially 2 years ago. It was like insane how well he was able to force missed tackles. He has really strong athleticism. You know, he had a great speed score. He has the size to be, you know, an every down back. But there are some flags, and I think that you know, there's some people that might be ignoring the flags a little bit. You know, his best analytically, his best season reception share is under 10%. That 10% mark, totally subjective. I mean, this is not like a you know, you're over 10%, then you're great. You're under 10%, you're bad. But it's usually sort of a number that I want a running back to get to, because we usually do see any elite back easily clear that mark when they're in college. And so he was able to get to that 10% mark. His breakout score is 48.2, which is totally average. Now, he did tear his ACL early in his collegiate career, and so that forced, you know, some of that production to come later and wasn't as great as a result of that. But at the same time, you know, it's still something to note. And so if you look at day two backs since 2011 who had a breakout score below 60, so it's well above where Trey Benson's at, and a reception share below 10%, here's a list of the day two backs with those while failing to hit those marks since 2011. Alex Green, Stephen Ridley, Christine Michael, Carlos Hyde, Matt Jones, Damian Harris, and Trey Sermon. So I just think that it's not great. It's not looking great. So I think the way that I view Benson is there's just a lot of volatility. I think there's some safer running backs you can go to in this class that might not have the same ceiling. And it just depends on sort of what kind of risk profile you want to take on when you're drafting in your rookie draft.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about safer running backs, but just from the, and I don't know if you'd agree with this, but from the mock drafts I've seen, from the running back rankings I've seen, if I'm thinking about safer in terms of who's going to go day two, Trey Benson seems like everybody thinks he's going to go day two. He just might be, you're saying amongst the backs who do go day two, less safe.
Yeah, exactly. If I were drafting in my rookie draft right now, today, I'd probably draft Trey Benson before any other running back because we feel so good about draft capital being there for him, right? And so obviously, if he goes day two, if he goes in the second round, let's say, and only like a Jonathan Brooks goes on day two or something like that, and then all these guys just go day three, then yeah, I mean, I think that there's a nice boost. That's why, you know, draft capital is obviously part of the equation here as well. I just think that within the player, if you're evaluating the guy individually, and I know that a lot of people who break down film say that he's an inconsistent back who's not necessarily super decisive. I think that shows up a little bit in his production profile too. Even 2 years ago when he was forcing missed tackles at a really, really high, like I'm talking like according to PFF, one of the best rates that they've seen over the last decade, right? He saw a shift in that even year over year. You know, it's not, there just isn't that overall consistency with Benson. And that's what scares me a little bit.
Okay, no, that makes perfect sense. Let's be a little bit optimistic with Trey Benson here, okay? He gets round two draft capital in whatever you think is the right situation and kind of hits his upside. What do you think the 3 to 5 year forecast for Trey Benson, if everything goes right, looks like?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that he if his upside hits and he falls into a decent spot as a round two running back, I think we're looking at probably a low end RB1 in dynasty. You know, like I still think that's part of his range of outcomes, which I don't feel that way about some of the other guys we're going to talk about. Like, so I do think that, you know, the higher end outcome exists for Benson. I just also think like his top comp, statistical comp in my model was Kenyon Drake. And I think that's sort of what we're looking at, where we saw flashes with Kenyon Drake, right? Like we saw him.
We had a Kenyon Drake moment for sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The fantasy community had a massive Kenyon Drake moment where he was a second round pick in redraft. And so I think that we could see that, but we know that Kenyon Drake had the tools. He had the athleticism. He was just so, so inconsistent week in and week out. And he would have these stretches where we're like, oh my gosh, like he could be pretty legit. And that's my fear with Benson, you know, but I do think that imagine Kenyon Drake and that output that we saw being consistent, then obviously you can see that low end RB1 outcome.
Well, and that type of inconsistency, I think, because like one of the places that people will say is the best place a running back could go is they go to the Chargers because they're going to run the ball 600 times and they're going to have a good run scheme, only they won't have a quarterback running it 30% of the time. So it's just going to be fantastic. Even with Gus Edwards there, a good rookie running back will put Gus Edwards in his place. I'm not sure that Trey Benson, especially with two coaches who value the way that Gus Edwards approaches things, that Trey Benson's going to take a lead role from like a Gus Edwards type, a veteran who just does everything the right way every play.
Yeah, I think that at the running back position in particular, because it is relatively replaceable in the actual NFL and even in fantasy, but I think that we can't necessarily discount. This is really hard to measure. This is totally subjective, but like I don't think we can totally discount like who would be a favorite player of a coach, right? Like someone who is just going to grind it out, be very consistent. And honestly, I think that's one of the reasons why Seattle last year went and got Zach Charbonnet is not because Kenneth Walker is bad. It's that he's another inconsistent home run hitting runner. And that's what I think Trey Benson is sort of like, where I don't know. And his profile isn't unlike Kenneth Walker's to some degree. I mean, Walker's was better on the ground. His total yards per team play rate was much better than Benson. Walker's the better prospect than Trey Benson. Don't get me wrong, but they both sort of had like a middling to below average receiving profile. And they both sort of have this home run ability where you watch them and you're like, holy crap, the athleticism's there. The home run hitting ability is there. But what if you get Zach Charbonnet, if you're Trey Benson, if you fall to the right spot year one, and then those inconsistencies show up, and all of a sudden you have this low success rate and you're only this home run hitting back. And you know, fortunately for like Kenneth Walker, his market value has maintained for the most part. And so I don't, you know, from a dynasty perspective, it hasn't been that bad.
Right.
But that's the kind of running back that Walker is. I think it's okay to say that he's this big play. It's sort of like you don't know what you're going to get each touch, but you know that something crazy is going to happen.
You know, you're very unlikely to get a 2 to 4 yard gain. Like it's going to be a disaster or it's going to be awesome. Yeah. And that might just be the best way to end the Trey Benson profile. It's going to be a disaster or it's going to be awesome. Let's move on to RB2 in the consensus rankings. It's Jonathan Brooks. And I've made the argument that if he had not torn his ACL last year, the conversation about this running back class would be much different. Because I do think he's the one guy in the class that if he just is perfectly fine and regains all of his athleticism, could take the league by storm the second half of his rookie year and jump into the top 12 of the dynasty running back rankings and really be a complete RB1. Am I too high on Jonathan Brooks?
No, I think that that's probably right. If you look at the stuff that my model's looking at, obviously it's production-based and age-adjusted production-based. And, you know, there are some players. So teammate score is going to help a guy like Jonathan Brooks, right?
Yes.
You had Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson coming out last year who played ahead of him. You can't really hurt or ding Brooks for not producing in a backfield with those two guys. And then what we saw this past year is he had a really good total yard per team play rate of 1.99 that's prorated before the ACL injury. That would have been that's one of the better numbers in the class. He's just one of six backs in the class to have a best season 10% reception share and a 1.9 total yards per team play rate. He's good in pass protection. He was a four-star recruit. He really has sort of the total package, if you will. I think he would be the consensus RB1. And the other thing too is he weighed in at the combine heavier than I thought he was going to be. But you know, this is one of those things where the model might have, because I have to use combine measurables to get everything standardized for weight. And, you know, a guy who isn't necessarily doing a bunch of cardio right now because of this ACL injury, maybe he's, 5 or 6 pounds heavier than what he probably plays at. Right. So you have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt, because you watch him, he's a little bit slimmer, of a back as opposed to like a more compact, like Blake Corum or something like that. But I think that Brooks probably would be the easy consensus RB1. I do think though, Heath, that, from a game theory perspective and from like a dynasty perspective, I understand if people, even if they, because my model is probably going to look at Jonathan Brooks and have him as the RB1, depending on draft capital and stuff. Right. Like I wouldn't be shocked if that happens. I might not necessarily draft him as in his own tier or even maybe as the RB1 only because there's a real chance we don't see 100% Jonathan Brooks in year one in his rookie season. And if that happens, you're going to have some doubt entering year two where, is he just not that great? Or is he like, you're just going to ask a bunch of questions and you also might see his value drop a little bit just in the dynasty market. So I do think that you still have to take the ACL injury into consideration because of that game theory component. You want your guys to appreciate in value. And there's at least that chance that Jonathan Brooks doesn't.
Yeah, and I think like we had two examples last year of the young guys coming off the ACL and Breece Hall and Javonte Williams. I was kind of out on both. It turned out that the market was mostly right. Breece Hall needed about 6 weeks and then became the second best running back in fantasy football. And Javonte Williams just kind of struggled along and plotted all season long. And I don't think we have any good reason to have a lean on which direction Jonathan Brooks is going to fall on that. But I do wonder, like, he's not going to turn 21 until July. Yeah. Shouldn't we give him a little bit of a break on the ACL from the fact that like he could skip this year and still be younger than some of the running backs we're comparing him to?
I think you and I should. Yes. I think that anyone listening to this should absolutely. Do I think the dynasty market is going to do that? I don't know. I think that the dynasty market is not only really reactionary, but it's really, it looks at production and says, oh, this guy was good. I mean, look at Romeo Doubs and what happened with Doubs after the playoff run that the Packers had and like these big games that he was having and stuff like that. He was like wide receiver 35 at one point, within the dynasty market because he was producing, he was getting touchdowns, yada, yada, yada. But then you look at that wide receiver room and you're like, there's four legitimate players that are wideouts in that group. Why is Romeo Doubs being singled out in this way when Dontavian Wicks coming off a really, really good rookie season is 20 spots below him in wide receiver rank? It just doesn't make that much sense. The dynasty market just reacts so strongly to production. And if the production's not there for Brooks, you and I, if we draft Brooks, we'll say, all right, we're holding on to him, right? Like we're not, we're not trading him away after a down year coming off an ACL. But at the same time, we do want to always accumulate as much value as possible on our dynasty rosters. And there's at least a risk that is evident and already there and already sits there with Jonathan Brooks and his ACL that I think that you should at least use that and utilize that information to some degree.
Absolutely. And like with Benson, we'll finish with the upside. We'll finish with the positives. I do think like you've got to take the ACL into account. But let's just get crazy. He goes day two to the Cowboys, and he gets to October 1st, and he's 100% Jonathan Brooks. I think he has the most upside in this class, and like he could easily be a top, not easily, but if everything goes right, he could be a top 10 dynasty running back like 8 months from now, right?
Yeah, the other thing too is if he goes to a great landing spot, I think that people are going to be a little bit more lenient about a lack of production, right? Like if it's not there, or even if it is there, during the second, like, look, if Jonathan Brooks goes to Dallas and he dominates the second half of, like, I think it's possible that he would then dominate the second half of his rookie season, which is the piece of the season that matters most. We'll get the most influence in rankings, the way that we view these guys. I mean, what, he's probably like RB7, RB8 in Dynasty, you would assume, after that point. So yeah, I mean, I think that Brooks definitely still has that in his range of outcomes.
We have RB3 is the guy who maybe his name's been mentioned more on this podcast than any other. I think I've heard that some people have turned it into a drinking game whenever I say Blake Corum and Chargers. He is the running back out of Michigan who was a complete workhorse for Jim Harbaugh, but also shared. They just ran the ball enough that you can have both of those. His production was really front-loaded, which I think is interesting. Not production, but efficiency. I think is interesting in terms of we like young production, but we don't really like it when the last thing we saw wasn't as good. So how do you kind of mesh those two things with Blake Corum?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that you can subjectively look at him and say, okay, he was coming off the injury and there's reason that he maybe lacked some burst and such this past season. But look, I think even despite all that, he's a very good, very consistent back. You kind of know what you're getting from him. He had really solid above average marks sort of across the class, right? He had the 9th best breakout score in the class. His best season reception share was 12th best. If there's one negative or red flag to his profile, you could say size for sure. I'll get to that in a second, but also his age, right? He's well over 23 years old, and age is a factor that we have to not only consider in terms of how these guys produce and what kind of talent they hold, because younger players producing early shows us that they're talented. I use the example in my prospect guide where if an 11-year-old is playing the piano and this crazy, crazy song on the piano versus a 19-year-old playing that song, chances are, you know, when they're 25 years old, the 11-year-old is going to be way better at playing piano than the 19-year-old will be, right? We're seeing that with Corum to some degree, but he was able to at least produce at a fairly young age, just that he's coming out a little bit older. And then when it comes to size, and I think that this is really interesting to sort of like paint this picture of Blake Corum being like a solid potential RB2 in fantasy. I don't think that he has necessarily RB1 upside, but to be a consistent, solid enough, throw him in your lineup, you know, get 12 to 14 PPR points and feel okay about it. I think that this is probably the thing that tells it best. So I do think size is somewhat of a concern. He's sub 5'9". Since 2011, we've only had 6 running backs get drafted in the top 100 who were under 5'9". And again, height is not part of my model, but weight is. He's right. At least a little bit more compact. He has a decent BMI. But even still, let's just run with this for a little bit. Only one of those running backs scored more than 15 PPR points per game in one of his first 3 seasons in the league. So 1 of 6 gave you like a, you know, low end RB1 season once throughout that time frame. But 5 of those 6 smaller backs, shorter backs, hit 12 or more PPR points per game in one of their first 3 years in the league. And I think that's the perfect example of what Blake Corum is that if you get a smaller running back that's going to get drafted, and I say smaller as in just like stature and you know, height. If you get a smaller running back getting drafted, you know, on day 2 in the top 100, you know, there's likely some talent there. They're likely going to give him some sort of workload. It's just that I don't know if the ceiling would necessarily be there, right? And that's exactly what his profile screams throughout. I think he's arguably the safest running back in this class, right? Like if you want to get RB2 production, you know, in a tandem more than likely at the NFL level, who then, you know, if his tandem partner gets hurt, you know, he can probably shoulder the workload for a game or two or a stretch of games. That's great. But I don't know if he's ever going to be like a true bell cow back in the NFL.
When you talk about Blake Corum in a tandem, does he end up in a tandem that's one of those ambiguous tandems where it's two series for one guy, one series for the next? Is it a tandem because he's coming off the field on passing downs and third downs? Is it a tandem because he's coming off the field in short yardage and in the red zone?
Yeah, I think it's a series thing. Like, he actually was pretty good at the goal line and such. I don't know if an NFL team, because like Darren Sproles was decent at, you know, at doing that kind of thing. I just don't know if like an NFL team is going to really do that. So I do think there is some fear of him not having the touchdown equity that we would want. But I do think it's more of a rotation, you know, by drive or something, or even him, you know, between the 20s, seeing 60-65% of the team's backfield share. But then once you get into the red zone, you switch things out a little bit. I don't think that he's not a bad pass catcher. I just don't think that he's, you know, someone that you're going to need to have on the field during those passing down situations. But look, if he goes, let's just say he goes to the Chargers, right? And he's paired up with Gus Edwards, which I think could work because, you know, I think he's capable enough as a receiver. You're not going to get this like dynamic receiving out of the backfield with Blake Corum, but you're going to get solid enough receiving, better than Gus Edwards, right?
Right.
And so in that kind of situation, I could see the rotation happening, him maybe getting a little bit more work in between the 20s, and then Gus Edwards coming in and stealing all the touchdowns.
And like when you compare, because he's the kind of guy, it seems like to me, and I don't know if you've watched enough of the two to say, but he's probably more likely to be consistent on a play-to-play basis than Trey Benson.
Yes.
And so his fresh legs over someone like Gus Edwards, you could see in the second half of the season, they trust him enough to where he really is the 1A, as opposed to Edwards starting the year as the 1A. Let's finish with his upside. You already kind of said you don't see that as probably an RB1 type situation unless he just happens to have a really good touchdown year. It sounds like the type of player that probably not great enough at anything to like guarantee he's going to do all of that work for the team, but not bad of an effort anything that he has to come off the field in any certain situation. Is it like a David Montgomery type situation in terms of a potential fantasy upside? Could we see like somewhere in that RB15 range?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of him being in that range, yes. My fear though, you know, a guy like Montgomery always has the, you know, the touchdown appeal, and he's at least shown us that he had the three down capability, and he had a more well-rounded production profile coming out as a prospect. I know that you're not making that comp per se, but like the comps, just to give you an idea, the statistical comps that were spit out for Blake Corum, and I know this is going to make people not excited about him, but it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Daryl Henderson, and Kendall Hunter, right? Where, you know, I think that a guy like Henderson at his peak, if you will, you know, was still able to give you decent fantasy production in the right spot. You know, he just tailed off like most running backs generally do. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if Blake Corum is only in the league for 4 or 5 years, because that's just what happens at the running back position. But, you know, all those guys were capable three down backs, but they didn't do any one thing super, super special. And that sometimes can limit a guy's ability to find the field. And that's my fear a little bit with Corum. But I do think overall, he's solid. And if he gets top 100 draft capital, he's probably going to have an RB2 season, or at least a high-end RB3 season across his first 3 years in the league.
People get nightmares hearing the CEH name just because of what happened with him and Jonathan Taylor after we factored in first-round draft capital for CEH. Yeah. But I do maintain, as somebody who probably watched all of his football, there was a drive in his rookie season. They were giving him the goal line work, and he had one or two games where he struggled so bad inside the five, and it like changed the entire arc of his career. Yes. They just decided from that point forward, he can never carry the ball inside. We would rather run an end around to Mecole Hardman than give it to CEH at the goal line. And it just completely changed the arc of his fantasy football career.
Totally.
So we will take one more break. I will say we've got two players left. I do have a little bit of time here for your questions. So if you have some questions about a player that we're not talking about, put that in the chat and we will get to it in just a moment. We are back and we are to RB4. And I was maybe a little bit surprised that this guy was RB4 in the rookie ADP, maybe just because I hadn't paid enough attention to it. But it is Jalen Wright out of Tennessee. This guy really caught my attention when I opened the Football Guys rookie draft guide for the first time, and they had him at RB1 in this class. I think it's easy to see the upside here. I have a hard time seeing very much floor with Jalen Wright. How do you view him?
Yeah, I think that's right. I bought into him more and more as the sort of process has gone on. Like if you look at my prospect guide right now, that's based on, you know, the projected draft capital is how I'm getting the scores, the pre-draft scores. That's on NFL mock draft database. But Jalen Wright's projected draft capital has risen quite a bit since I did, you know, since I launched the prospect guide a month ago. And so I bought into him more and more because of that for sure. But also, again, when you take a step back and look at this draft class, you don't have many players that stand out in terms of having these elite ceilings and having these really, really special traits. And with Jalen Wright, he has some special traits. I mean, if he didn't really get it done as a receiver in college, but his breakout score was only 45, wasn't anything special, but he can make huge plays. Over 25% of his rushes last season went 10 or more yards. That was first in the class. He ran a sub 4.440. He was 4.38. We know that he can create these explosive plays. And he also played alongside Dylan Sampson, who I'm not the biggest college football guy, like in season. I'm only looking at stuff out of the season and then looking at their transition, you know, to the NFL. But evidently, you know, moving forward, like that's another great prospect that he played alongside. So, you know, that's one of the flaws of teammate score is that when there's a guy who's an underclassman, that's really good, that a running back competed with, it's not necessarily going to understand that and get that signal because he's not entering the league yet. So if Sampson's bad, then whatever, you know, then this is moot. But I do think subjectively you can throw that out there and say, okay, he played with some decent competition there at Tennessee as well. I think at a minimum though, Jalen Wright is going to play in a tandem. And this sort of goes back to what we talked about earlier, where the running back landscape in fantasy right now is a bunch of RB2s who are in tandems. And if you're going to get efficiency from a player, which I think you will get from Jalen Wright because of his big playability, maybe he'll never be a bell cow. But I do think that you're at least going to see this tandem effort from him where he can see a Devon Achane type workload where he's getting a rookie season workload, I should say, where he's getting 30 to 45, maybe 30 to 40% of the team's running back rushes and then some work through the air or even a Keaton Mitchell type workload. And that could be enough for him to give you some spiked weeks, give you maybe RB3 production with RB2 upside, but then there's the upside of what if all of these subjective secondary things like the teammate competition and the way that Tennessee used him. It's not like this would be the first time that that Tennessee misused a running back entering the NFL over the last decade or so. And so I think that because of that, the floor, while he does have a scary profile from a floor ceiling perspective, like a Trey Benson, if you will, like if you're looking at the volatility of the profile, I think that Jalen Wright fits a tandem better than what Trey Benson would fit, right? Like Trey Benson would be entering the league and a team would be thinking, oh, this guy's a bell cow or bust. Whereas Jalen Wright, I think it's like, oh, we're drafting him a little bit later than where Benson might go. We can use him in a tandem or more so in a tandem. And then from there, you know, that's the floor is that he's in the tandem. And then from there, maybe he just takes over naturally.
Yeah, it seems to me like he is a guy who possesses some really elite traits that coaches are going to look at him and think, well, I could teach him to do that better or that better or that better. But I also think, like you mentioned it, he's going to be in a tandem. I think he's probably looking at 150 to 180 touches in his rookie season. And so he really has to be efficient at that volume if he's not going to see his value drop in his first year in the league. I wonder if that makes him a little like, does that make him more or less landing spot dependent? Like it kind of feels like he needs to be in a pretty good situation in terms of like the quality of the team, not necessarily needing an opportunity for touches.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But then you also, you know, if he goes to a team that has an open backfield and some team really thinks that they can work with his traits and all of a sudden it's the rocket ship emote, like he's just off, right? And so I think it can go in a lot of different directions. But yeah, I mean, I think the most likely outcome is he's in a tandem. And if he's going to be in a tandem, we're going to need him to be in an offense that could create efficiency on the ground, which is what we saw from what we've seen from Baltimore through the years and what we saw out of Miami with Devon Achane and even what we saw with Jahmyr Gibbs, right. In Detroit, where we know that the offensive line's there, the run game's there. They have that effective run atmosphere and environment for that player. So yeah, I think that landing spot with all of these guys, but there's some guys like a Jalen Wright where it could go a longer way.
I don't think, I mean, he doesn't have anything in his college past profile to suggest this, but you mentioned former Tennessee running back, so we'll get it out of the way. A guy who has been incredible without a workhorse workload in the past, Alvin Kamara, who did go to Tennessee. He doesn't have that type of upside, right?
No, and Kamara too, you know, back whenever I remember that was one of the first years I started prospecting, was like in that like 2017 ish range or whatever. And Kamara coming out had a pretty weak, at the time I was like, oh, this production profile isn't that great. I'm not, you know, whatever. He's not that athletic, because he didn't test that well either. Like Kamara, I feel like has this, there's this idea that he's like this super, super fast athletic back. That's not necessarily what Kamara is. And he's also bigger than what a lot of people realize. You know, there was that, the Gibbs to Kamara comps last year where, I mean, Kamara had like 20 pounds on Gibbs, you know, entering the league. But regardless of all that, Kamara's receiving profile, at least, was really, really, really strong coming out. Like that was, if there's one piece to Kamara's profile going from Tennessee to the NFL, it was the fact that he had an unbelievable receiving profile. And I personally, at that time, was not weighing that enough, right? And so that's something that I've evolved with. I am a sucker for a good receiving profile at running back, because I've seen how that translates from the player doesn't even have to be a great receiver in the NFL. It's just that it shows you, it's a signal for talent, because these teams are giving their running backs the ball in so many different ways, right? Like they're trying, and you can even get some signal on special teams if they're, if they're a punt and kick returner, because in college teams just throw their best players out there and they give them the ball any way they can possibly get them the ball. Right. And so with Kamara, the fact that he had that receiving profile, it's not there for Jalen Wright in the same way. I think that Kamara is a much better, and I know that this is hindsight driven too, but Kamara was a much better prospect than Jalen Wright, in my opinion.
Good stuff. We'll view him as, you know, maybe someone in that Tyjae Spears range in year one, and then hope that he grows into a bigger role than that. Prospect number five, I don't know that he could be a whole lot different than Jalen Wright. And this is the kind of, like, Braylon Allen is the guy that it historically would have been higher on than most. I'm a sucker for this type of prospect. He does seem like somebody to me that if everything goes right, could be over 300 touches. How do you look at Braylon Allen?
I think that's the right way to look at it for sure. I'll say this, he probably objectively has the best sort of production related, age adjusted production related metrics in the model. And that's because when Braylon Allen came out of high school, he left high school a year early. He went to Wisconsin and he was recruited as a defensive back, kind of safety, maybe linebacker hybrid. But then he decided to play running back, and he then goes to, and he plays running back year one at 17 years old. And he has a pretty productive season at Wisconsin, which is crazy, because like who in there, like it just shows you how talented this guy is as an athlete, that he gets recruited as a defensive player. And then he enters Wisconsin, a program that has given us so many NFL caliber running backs over the last 10, 15 years. And he just goes and he plays well. Like he's productive immediately at 17 years old. So his breakout score is the best in the class, because he was 17 freaking years old doing things on a football field at Wisconsin. Right. The problem though, is his production didn't get that much better as his career went on at Wisconsin. And then the other problem I have, he's 5'11", 235, like you said. I mean, like he has the prototypical size to just shoulder a massive, massive workload if a team is willing to give it to him. The problem, though, is if you look at how he force missed tackles, it was below average in this class. And you have to wonder, why is it happening? And then you read scouting reports from people who are really dissecting the film a little bit more than I am. And a lot of them are saying that he just doesn't use his size the way that you would want a 235 pound back to use their size. Right. And so I think the fear with him is, so his top comp in my model, like the objective comp, is James Conner, you know, that like where James Conner's had a great fantasy career. I think that if anyone were to look at James Conner and say like, you're an elite running back, that'd be kind of silly. It's just that he's found the right spots throughout his career to really just be the solo guy. And he's just solid, right? Like he's a reliable, strong running back and catch some passes out of the backfield. I think Braylon Allen's probably not as good of a pass catcher, but he could end up being sort of that like reliable piece. But I think that the fear is that Braylon Allen goes down the path of AJ Dillon, where, you know, it's this bigger body guy who, you know, at times we've seen those moments of him really using, you know, his body the way that you would think he would, and he probably should. But you know, the whole package isn't necessarily there. And I think that Braylon Allen might get typecasted as being just an early down back, and that's a really big problem for his fantasy value.
I will say, like, and this might be something where I'm just totally wrong, but you've mentioned all the reasons to really value age, and I like, it blows my mind just having had a couple of 17-year-olds and having a 14-year-old now, of a 17-year-old leaving school early to go play Division I football in the Big Ten and rushing for 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
Like, that is incredible. And it like, you can see it now because he turned 20 in 2024.
Yeah.
He doesn't even turn 21 until the year 2025. And so I wonder, like, that young age, does it also give more hope for, we talk about he's not as good a pass catcher as James Conner. I saw some things from James Conner the last year and a half catching the ball in Arizona that I don't think he had in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He's really looked good as a pass catcher, or he doesn't necessarily use his body the right way. Does the young age give you any more of a hope that he improves on some of those things in the NFL?
Yeah, I think for sure. And like, we can't discount too. And this is where, like, you know, again, going back to like the way that people view someone like me, who's like modeling this stuff, and they think that I'm like so strict in the way that I'm looking at these prospects and whatnot, and that I can't stray away from what the model's saying. That's not it at all. This is just a guide more than anything else to make sure that I'm not missing something obvious and such. I think that more subjectively, we can't totally discount just things that we aren't able to measure or see. And that's like this is going to sound kind of lame, but like work ethic, right? Like James Conner overcame something that the majority of people will never understand, right? With his cancer diagnosis and doing what he did there. I'm sure that changed him as a human to be a built different, if you will, right? And so I do think that like a guy like Conner, because I graduated from Pitt. I watched James Conner in college like you wouldn't believe. And I did not expect him to have the career that he had and has had in the NFL, mm-hmm. right? And I think there are just players, Kyren Williams, another one, where Kyren Williams from year one to year two clearly improved as a player, or even from what we saw in college to what we saw then in year two. It's not just, oh, Sean McVay gave him more work. It's no, we got to, can we just give the running back some credit for working hard and doing really well and getting better, right? So I think any of these players, you can make a blanket statement and say all of them can improve. I think that, you know, just like as a human, we can sit here and say, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, where were you at 20 versus where were you at 23? And you learn a lot during that time period. And you can understand why a guy like Allen would then also maybe learn a lot, because it's not like he's had the same experience in college and the same amount of years under a coaching staff to really fine tune his game. So yeah, I mean, I think that you should use age to your advantage a little bit whenever you're analyzing these guys, because it is important.
I will say, just for the record, I was still pretty much an idiot at 23. It took several more years than that for me. Is it fair to say, we'll finish up here, like we talked about everybody's upside, Braylon Allen's upside feels to me like the guy who has like a top 8 fantasy season and half of the fantasy community is still saying he's not any good.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I also think it could go in a way of us know part of the problem with Braylon Allen analytically is that he didn't test, right? Like we don't know how fast he is, because he said that he had this lingering high ankle or something that he just didn't want to mess with it or whatever. If we knew what his weight adjusted 40 time was, I'm thinking more of like the dynasty market and how the dynasty market would react. Let's say that he ran like a 4.5 even at that size. I think that a lot of people would just be in on Allen, and that would give him nice insulation from year one to year two in the NFL in terms of his overall value in the market. I could also see, though, if he has a big season, I could see it being, he didn't play running back, but I could see it being sort of like a Chase Claypool situation of like, you know, the community just being totally split, you know, between these guys who are just aggressively going after him and then managers who are just not going after him whatsoever. Because let's be honest, a lot of people just stick to their priors, you know, and if you are, there's a lot of people who are Braylon Allen people right now. And if you're a Braylon Allen person entering year one and he has a good year one, you're going to be even more of a Braylon Allen person. And if you're not a Braylon Allen person and he has a good year one, you're probably still not going to be that big of a Braylon Allen person, because it's always in the back of your mind of like where he came from and the kind of game he has and all that kind of stuff. So I do think his ceiling is there. Like I think Braylon Allen hypothetically has just as high of a ceiling as maybe anyone other than like a Jonathan Brooks in the class.
Right.
But I do think that the chance of that ceiling hitting is even lower than a guy like Trey Benson.
Makes perfect sense. Those are your top 5 running backs by current rookie ADP. JJ, thank you so much. Awesome, awesome stuff. Tell everybody one more time where they can find the late round prospect guide.
Yeah, all my work over on lateround.com, really easy to find. You'll see a big ugly picture of my mug right as you hit lateround.com, but you can check it out there.
Make sure you guys tune in on Friday for part 2 with Emory Hunt. Thanks.